Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Dan Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we are joined today by Nicole Bessa and Joshua Louise Smith.
How dare you?
Chill. How are you all doing today?
Hold on, I'm
so great.
Angrily commenting on Facebook right now. I'm so sorry to be distracted. It's what? Just that someone posted, oh my god, I'm on too many singers forums, and someone was talking about how they don't like emotionally unattached singers like Alison Krauss, who's one of the most brilliant emotional singers, and how dare they? So sorry, I'm just like so close to finishing. But if any of you
hate totally Alison
Krauss, got a little summer heat under the collar. Mm-hmm. Sometimes on Facebook, it gets very volatile.
Well, that's very interesting that you say that. Because I don't know if you know this about this segment, but that's actually basically the premise.
Oh.
Is questionable internet opinion. So it's based, the idea is that it's just things that have ruffled our feathers
right.
on Facebook.
That's why I'm
yeah,
voice.
Exactly.
That's why I do not feel any qualms about sitting here on Facebook as we
well, amazing. And it's amazing, right? Because Nicole, so you shared a link that was really interesting and spurred a lot of conversation about workers' rights, and it was really relevant to singers, and we're gonna have a pretty great conversation about it, I can tell already. I know before we do that, we have to do a little bit of housekeeping.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, first, we have a shout-out. The lovely and talented and entrepreneurial...
Innovative.
Heart-throbbing.
Mm-hmm.
Is she tall?
You know?
I feel like she has a tall... I've never actually...
Fantastic never, hair is, she, I think, part
does,
of it.
She's got good hair. I don't know. I think that...
I think she's, like, my height.
Well, I'm shorter than you.
I want to imagine that she is, yeah. Maybe I'm just so impressed by her as a person that I think
I
she's
I enjoy
my
that
height.
We haven't said her name yet.
Yeah. Brenda Turner.
Brenda Turner.
Brenda Turner.
Brenda!
Thank you so much. Recent subscriber to the show.
Donor to the show. Mm-hmm.
Hooray!
On yeah. a monthly basis. Yeah.
If you normally skip the last 2 minutes of our podcast, then sorry, but we're talking about it now. We have donors to our show. It's the reason we're able to keep it free and open to the public.
As if we wouldn't keep it free.
I know. Well, I mean, like, some podcasts have paywalls and stuff like that, and obviously, like, we're not anywhere near that important, but
someone asked us about if we were going to do Patreon, and I was like, well, you know, we would if we actually withheld any content,
right? Yeah, exactly.
Because, like, what are we withholding?
But also, know? Like, if you're not listening to the last 2 minutes of the show, you're missing the snippets that we share of our Care Bears erotic fan fiction.
That is true.
It's getting saucy.
Oh,
it's getting saucy.
That fisting segment, though.
I thought that was a little gratuitous, actually.
It was a gratuitous Care Bear fisting.
Yeah. You know. I was a little offended by it.
Look, we can't help where that ends up, you know? That's just artistic freedom.
That's right.
America. Yeah. Anyway, Brenda Turner, thank you so much.
Also, I'm gonna take some liberty here, and I'm going to go ahead and announce some show dates for our summer performance series, because some shit's been confirmed.
Yeah.
So, if you, listener, want to hang out with us and listen to some amazing music, you can find us at... I'm going to release two official ones that we haven't discussed. I'm also going to move further away from the mic.
No, you're good. I just lowered it.
So, then I'm going to move back. So, we, on July 13th,
hey.
Are going to be hosting a country duo from Nashville.
What?
They're called Riley Hill. They have a show at Davenport's that weekend, and they're coming up, and they're doing just another show for us. So that's going to be really fucking cool. And we're going to talk to them at the show afterward and, you know, record a little interview. So you can talk to them. It's going to be at Buffalo Bar up in Rogers. And so you can drink and listen to some amazing lady country, which, fuck yeah.
And everyone should come out because it's the day before my birthday. We can celebrate. I'll be turning 17 again.
Perfect.
I can't drink. I'll be drinking Shirley Temples because I'm underage.
Do they have Shirley Temples? I just had my 19th birthday recently.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep, just last year. Oh, I have another one coming up this year.
That's really exciting.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm 7. So, and then on July 20th, the following Thursday at Buffalo Bar, we will be featuring the music of local composer Elijah Olson. He is an electronic and acoustic performer. He sings, he plays saxophone, and he does electronic tracks.
Okay.
So we're going to utilize some of Buffalo Bar's tech equipment, and we're going to see what happens. And so, yeah, so those two, July 13th, Riley Hill, some Les de Contre, and Elijah Olson, some solo electronic saxophone vocal tracks. We said it would be diverse.
Yep. Yeah, and we actually had to re-record the first minute of today's episode because I've been in such deep contact with Sam Ataguile and Lily Guerrero about one of our performances that I called Nicole Lily. And I don't know why I'm bringing it back up now, but I just wanted to use it as an opportunity to plug the Latin composer's recital too, which I'm really excited about.
From the top, let's record again.
Yeah. No, but I am really excited about it. They're basically being the artistic heads of that whole concert thing. And so I'm just taking every opportunity I can to also talk about that.
Yeah, and one final thought before we get into actual thoughts, because we have a lot to discuss, actually, this episode. We still have some open dates for these, for our performance series. We have some dates in August. We have some dates through July, specifically at Buffalo Bar. So if you have a project that you want to work on, that you want to perform, send it to us, and we'll talk about it, and we'll find a date for you.
Josh, you look interested. Are you
Josh,
thinking about
the... Josh's wheels are turning. I can see
the,
it.
The full reading of the Care Bears erotic fiction?
The musical.
Good.
It was at 10, and then I didn't know it could go past 10, and it just did.
Yeah.
10
That's
out
our
of
10, specialty.
And it's like, I don't know.
It's like 11.
Yeah, 125 billion.
Yeah.
Out of 10.
That's
cool.
That's it escalated quickly.
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah. All right.
Cool. Well, so, back on the note of Facebook arguments that I've started.
Yes.
Yeah!
So, Nicole, you shared this awesome article from The Atlantic, which I fucking love The Atlantic. The Atlantic is one of the last, decent progressive newspapers. And they have this article. It mostly has to do with workers' rights generally. So it's not specifically an artistic bent. The article was called When the Boss Says, Don't Tell Your Coworkers How Much You Get Paid. I'd seen the article before. I don't think I'd read the whole thing, but then you shared it, and I read the whole thing, and I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, that in your post you were basically like, I know it's not outright related to the arts, but I am curious about what people think.
Yeah.
How it ties into the arts. And boy, did you ever get thoughts.
Right. Well, kind of the idea, or the reason why I posted it is because there are so many times when, artists are so hungry for work. And, we live for our work, too. And when you are in the positions that we are, and getting the work is more important than the value of the work, it becomes a conversation that we really need to have. And, especially as young artists, we go to these young artist programs, and, especially if you're a female soprano, there's no negotiating that happens, you know?
It's just, this is what we'll pay you.
Right, this is what we'll pay you. If it's worth it, come out. If it's not, well, we'll find someone else to fill your shoes. And so that was a really kind of important thing for me to kind of take from that, that there are people, and even when artists hire artists, we tell each other, if we could keep this under wraps, I'm making a different deal for you, or I'm paying you different than so-and-so.
Yeah.
And that's just not, it's just, sometimes it's really just not fair, you know? There are a lot of things that make a person differently qualified and stuff like that. But, just, it was something that I really felt we needed to talk about a little bit more, and it's hard because there's this like romanticism over being a starving artist and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree.
Yeah, and I think that there are many avenues that we can take this discussion, but I'm going to kick it off because there's something in my professional life that bothers me, and that is in a church job position when you are told to keep your professional status under wraps.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah. That is an experience that I have had many, many times, and it is deeply frustrating to me because it undermines my position as a professional,
right.
and it gives me volunteer status, which in that particular case, I am not a volunteer. I'm not volunteering my time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I am being paid for my, I'm being paid for my efforts. I'm being paid for my musicianship.
Paid for your labor and for your skills.
Exactly. Yep. And to, you know, not be able to openly discuss, I mean, not like walk into the choir room and like flip over a table and be like, this is for the $40 or anything, but like to not, you know, if someone asks you like, well, what do you do for work? You know, especially in that case, like if someone,
when you're at the job and
you
someone's
know,
like, what do you do for work?
And you can't say, well, there's this. And then I also do this and this. It's always like, oh, well, I do this. Well, you know, I sacrifice a lot of my free time to come here, but then I'm also working 55 hours a week. And it's like, oh, well, then why do you come? It's like, well,
because I'm getting
paid.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that is, you know, that's kind of like a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a subpoint to this larger picture of issues.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I feel like this is something that kind of is an issue that I can't escape, that for some reason when people go to have religious services, they feel that the whole thing should be free, or that, you know, to pay people to pay clergy is like some kind of an abomination.
Mm-hmm. Right, because
but,
it's a ministry and it's
right,
their duty.
Yes, and, you know, there are times and opportunities where, you know, if and when that is important to a person, they will do that happily, volunteer, and, you know, give freely. But in our case, oftentimes, we actually literally cannot afford to do it for free.
Right.
You know? So we show up to also elevate the choir, too, or, like, to elevate the experience, you know, to help kind of lead all the voices so that they know who to pick out and, you know, okay, I follow so-and-so. I always follow Maureen because she always has the part. She always has it learned really well, or she sight reads it really easily. I know that if everyone else jumps off the ship, I can stay on board because Maureen is my life jacket.
Right.
No, and to your point, I think it's always really interesting to me that the people that are the most like, well, if you're at a church, like you really should be there doing it for free, are also the people that tend to be the most like, well, we really got to cut the bloat of government. And that's a really tricky thing for me because when you're constantly increasing the cost of life, like, and I mean that generally, like, the cost to live, the cost for healthcare, the cost for insurance, the cost for, like, car insurance even. Like, all of these things, there is just, like, supporting big businesses that are constantly, there are more and more bills that we have to pay for every piece of our lives. And so when you weigh that against the other thing, where it's like, well, if every bit of my life is an expense, then every bit of my work should also be an income. If that's really where we're going to go with it.
Right.
But that's also like, and I'm definitely not sitting here trying to like make a giant like takedown of capitalism point right here. But I also think that is kind of a problem with capitalism is like, it's especially when you look at kind of where capitalism now is now, where the perspective is top down, because everybody wants to be the king, right? Everybody wants to be the CEO.
Yes.
And so because of that, we only look at capitalism through that lens. Mm-hmm. When in reality, we're all workers. And I think that's what's so powerful about this article is workers' rights. And that also really transitions really well into kind of my next thought, which is I think the thing that workers need most is transparency. And to that end, there is a cost for that, and that is, it's potentially awkward conversations of having to look at someone and go, this is why I'm getting paid more than you. If, even if, let's say, the two people are being paid, right? And I mean, there's the level of you work at a church job and the people there are volunteered and you're being paid. And I think to some extent, most of the time, people that are volunteers and you're a paid, like, section leader, they get why you're being paid.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
When you have that conversation, it's like, oh, well, right, you are able to sight, like, you're able to take a piece of music and sight read it immediately. And that is why you, what you're doing here is work. You mm-hmm. are currently interpreting music from a piece of paper that you just received.
Interpreting, huh?
Yes.
Interpreting.
Yeah.
Nailed it. But then to the other end of it, when you get into the conversation of kind of mid-level arts companies, something that you had mentioned before too, I think it's really important that we start talking about the people that are that deserve to be paid more. And I think that there are also people like, and I don't mean to sit and like bash certain fox or anything. And I say this as someone that I think falls into one of these fox of a person who is more likely to get paid, like a yeah. tenor or a bass or a baritone right, are right. more likely to get paid. And I think that's a statement that is not that aggressive.
And
no, absolutely terrible. Not.
And it's so interesting because it's for. It's for reasons that are maybe different than why men make more money in the workforce.
Right.
Because yes. here it's a weird supply and demand thing.
Yes, there, it is.
You can find it, fill a soprano spot very easily and not necessarily a tenor. Whereas men are dime a dozen in like the office workforce, but then they're still making more money there, which mm-hmm. doesn't make any sense.
You know, but
from
it's,
that perspective,
yeah,
right. it, or from any perspective, right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's still not just about supply and demand because oh, you no, know, right. definitely there are more male composers that are you know either acknowledged or yes. you know funded or whatever. More male conductors, like we're hearing more and more about it. You know, one like. one Atlantic article at a time or one BuzzFeed article yeah. at a time every 6 months or maybe even year and a half or something yeah. or some you know so it's very interesting but yeah that is a good point is that especially particularly in the singer microcosm in terms of being cast it is definitely a supply and demand thing
yeah no and I think it's interesting too because what it ends up really doing is you end up having this game of worker versus worker and that's something that I think ended up happening kind of in your comment thread was with I got into a yeah. conversation with someone about it and coming out of it I just kind of realized like oh we're just two different perspectives of the workers that work in the arts.
Yes.
Right.
And I think that's such an interesting thought because I think the person that I was talking to was coming more of the direction of, well, you know, like if I'm being paid a little more, there's a reason for that.
Right.
But I guess my personal stance is that like, I think if there's a reason for you to be paid more, you have every right to be paid more. If there's yeah. a genuine reason. But I also think you don't get to be like, well, I'm also not going to talk about it with anyone because that's potentially an awkward conversation.
Yeah.
And I think if you're genuinely thinking that you deserve to be paid more, you have to look at the person who's being paid less and go, I think I deserve to be paid more than you and here's why. And I think that when you get into those conversations, first off, if it is genuine, all of the rules and the strata that's been set up that set it up that you are being paid more, then it's potentially educational for the sorry
You're educational George for, W. Bush over here coming up with his own words
it's potentially educational for the people that are being paid less but and I think what will happen I mean this part of this could be proven wrong but I think what will end up happening more often is that a case that would need to be taken to corporate heads and company heads would arise where we realize that yeah, sure, some people are being paid more than others, and that fact in and of itself is a potentially awkward conversation for your castmates or for your coworkers or whatever. But more often than not, everyone's being underpaid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. Everyone, I feel like more often than not, you know, everyone, every single artist can tell you at least 10 times with every single finger that they have on their hand the number... that they've been underpaid.
Yeah.
You know? So we have... Even the people that are paid considerably well can still tell you the times that they haven't been paid the way that they should have been or they've been, you know, like a transaction has been canceled or whatever. Mm-hmm. I really feel like it's not a particularly awkward conversation. I do understand that it's private. And I think that's kind of like... you know, you should never feel obligated to share more than you want to with anybody. If I am in a cast, you know, I'm not going to run around and go like, hey, yo, I got, like, such and such for this. Is that what you got? Like, is that, that's what you got, right? You know? But, like, if it comes up naturally in a conversation, like, yes, I'm, you know,
yeah.
That's a conversation that I would love to have. And if it feels like that's where the conversation is going, like, let's talk about it. And let's also talk why we took the same gig that we did under the assumption that we, you know, sometimes we are being paid like a flat rate. Each person is just being paid the same amount. So let's talk about why it was worth it for us to each be paid that flat rate, you know, considering that we, like, maybe we are qualified, but in different ways or whatever. And then also, like, if there is, you know, there at the very least at our age, and for me, there's always been like a male counterpart who, you know, if it's not like a paid gig, like something that people can relate to, like if it's a young artist program or something, but it's scholarship based, you know, and a male counterpart gets a bigger scholarship, like,
yeah.
You know, just like, just to talk about that, just to know, like, okay, like this is probably why he was asked, because their tenor got sick, and then their backup tenor already had a thing, and then, you know, so on and so forth.
Right.
So that's why I'm here, and that's why I got a free ride. Why are you here? Well, I'm here to add a role, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
We can talk about that, and I can understand, you know, what I'm taking away from it and what I'm giving to it a little more, and it's really not about, like, attacking another person or being like, oh, well, I should be getting more than you, or I should be, you are actually more qualified than I am. It's really not about that. It's really just about protecting yourself, because you can't, when you are making as little as we do sometimes, you really can't afford to not know what's behind all of these numbers.
Right.
Well, and I, you know, to backtrack a little bit on what you said about, you know, you would never go up to a fellow castmate or fellow coworker and be like, I'm getting paid this much. How much are you getting paid? I think that was kind of the point of the article, was that that was what we should be doing.
To go up and...
I mean, feel like it shouldn't be discouraged.
Yeah, that's what I think is important. Because that was the point of the article, that there are workplaces, there are environments where you will... that discussing your pay...
Yeah.
Is fireable.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
That's an authority can hear about it, and then you are jeopardizing yourself from being hired or kept.
Have you, any of you ever played around on Glassdoor.com?
No.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's mostly for, I feel like it's mostly for, like, corporate mm-hmm. jobs and stuff.
Basically, I get a social media ping because I put in that I'm interested in social media stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's, well, because it partially tells you about job openings, but also it's kind of like anonymous Yelp for employers.
Yeah.
And you talk, and usually includes what you're made there, or often you can include your salary, so they have like a salary range and stuff, and they aggregate that kind of data. And it's anonymous, which is really cool. And it's a step towards that kind of transparency that mm-hmm. employers can't really fight against.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, and then of course, it has the same kind of problem that any kind of crowdsourced review site has, that it mostly gets the bitter people, not necessarily the moderate, you know, whatever. But I like it in that it's a step towards that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's still pretty informative.
I do agree that there should be some balance between, like, your Yelps, where, like, I think a bad Yelp review potentially destroys a business. But, and that is, I think, not helpful at all in this world. But I think the fact of the matter is that, like, a lot of these of those crowdsourced aggregated sites are just working to make themselves more legitimate, and sometimes the only way to really do that is kind of like to disparage on different organizations and things like that.
Right.
Yeah. No, I work for I've mentioned this 10,000 times, Fairgrounds, where I work, is a new business, and everyone there is very focused on Yelp reviews right now. Like, at any given point in anybody's shift, at some point you're on Yelp looking at reviews mm-hmm. because the Yelp reviewers in Wicker Park will learn your name and talk about you
mm-hmm.
on the reviews. It's a positive review, but there's a review about me on the Yelp reviews where they specifically say, oh, and my barista Maureen was blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, It's like we are very much living in a consumer culture where there it fucking matters.
Yeah. It really does.
And in some way,
oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say that in some ways it's a total nightmare because you'll see, what, 200, 300 customers in a day? I don't know, something wild, right? Because I've had those kind of jobs. But then, like, one person will make that Yelp review, and all those satisfied people didn't go, and then your boss will fire you. Mm. I mean, like, yeah. That's extreme, but possible.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, for example, there's this woman who works with me who's just, like, this delightful, like, very positive person. And she has 6 positive Yelp reviews specifically about her on our Yelp page. But then there's one bad review about her. And she, like, was sat down and talked to about
it. Oh, yeah.
Specifically because, yeah, she had 1 out of 6 Yelp reviews.
It's a, too much power in the hands of the consumer sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's important.
Neoliberalism, man.
Yeah.
Every QIO, I bring it up, and I don't mean to, but we're such a consumer-driven society, and the whole idea of, like, consumers' rights is both important, but also the wrong way of
thinking. Right, it's also, like, a complete disaster all the time. It is important, but it's also complete. Like, I don't know. Like, in France, the managers probably don't really care what you think about the waiters. As long as everyone's like, you know, because you know, you can evaluate with your eyes. Am I making money? Is this business being profitable? Are people coming back? Yeah, without having to go, oh, but they didn't like this waiter this one time. Whereas here, we live in such a culture of, let me talk to your manager.
Right.
All the time.
Yep. That's one aspect of being promoted at my job that I'm not looking forward to. Is like being
the person that gets to talk to people.
The person on duty. Let me speak to your manager. Okay, Maureen. Hey, come over here. Talk to this angry person. Hi.
Yeah. It's amazing because you very rarely as a manager, because I've had plenty of that experience, do you really say anything different than what the employee had
precisely.
Just said? But because you're called a manager, they like they're somehow satisfied. It's such bullshit.
Mm-hmm. No. It's the game of having two people. If it's one person, but as soon as you feel like you're being grouped up on, then it's, I think you have to kind of back off.
Right.
You know? I wanted to come back to, and I knew I wanted to come back to it, now I've almost half forgotten it, one of the points that we were talking about earlier, back to kind of workers' rights. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk about, I'm kind of slowly remembering what I wanted to say, I wanted to talk about the idea of what we were talking about earlier about having the conversation. The kind of talking about the what you were saying was the point of the article, which was the idea of people
being able to have that open conversation.
Exactly. The license to do that, right? And I think it actually kind of comes to something that partly it ties into a conversation that we were having today over a personal message we were talking about. It got brought up again, the idea of sopranos that aren't black singing Summertime. Kind of led me into a more general thought, and we don't have to get too much into parsing that piece out. I think everybody knows my stance on that, and that I think black people should never sing Summertime again. I'm just kidding.
I was looking at my phone for a second, and then I heard that, and was like, what?
Yeah. No. I personally believe that white people, even outside of out of context, should not be singing Summertime. But that's just my stance. But anyway, the main point I wanted to say with that is we've had this conversation about politics generally. When we're talking about Democratic candidates, right, and we're talking about people that we need to make sure that the candidates we're running are pro-education, pro-health, all these things. And if they're not these things, then we need to find a different candidate. Pro-choice, all of these things. These stances that are progressive stances, that are the cornerstone of the Progressive Party, that we are, I guess, if we're going to champion the Democratic Party, these are the things that we need to make sure that the Democratic Party cares about, right? And we've talked about the idea of cleaning house and making sure that we keep our side accountable. I think that ties in really well to us as classical singers and as artists, and we need to keep our communities. I mean, that's kind of, I think, the vein of that initiative that the theater community had, the Save Our House, Save Our, Keep Our Something. Oh man, I'm so sorry, everybody. There's the initiative. It's basically the sexual assault awareness.
Not in my house.
The sexual assault awareness initiative in Chicago theaters, which is awesome. And it's this idea of just like cleaning up your community, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that really
holding your community accountable.
Exactly.
Not cleaning it up, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think the that ties in really well to this idea of. Sure, of course, like, we shouldn't have a police guard at the door, not a police, but, like, a designated person to be going around asking everybody what they are being paid, and then opening the conversation for a two-hour dialogue on why each person deserves to be paid more, or something like that. Like, it should not be to that extent, right? But I think that we are currently living in a world where we're all freelancers. We're all being paid whatever amounts. We're all just trying to cut it. We're being hired and not hired for specific reasons. And we're all being paid certain amounts and other amounts for other reasons. And the only people that are really benefiting from it are the companies. And the only real way that that there is going to be initiative against it is to give the license to have those conversations. And that's kind of where I come from, and where I agree with the point of the article. If the point of the article is that we should be forcing these conversations, I agree, because I think that in a way we do need to be looking internally and looking into our communities and saying, what is not working? What we need to turn the stone over and look underneath and figure out what's not working. And I think the idea of being against that, although I understand that there's a lot of societal pressure to be against that, people that know better need to know better. And need to make a point to know better. And need a point to, like, make a point to at least have their opinions heard. Like, it's so easy to kind of cater to centrist ideals and cater to the least common denominator of thought. But, like, to a certain extent, we've got to stand up for our progressive beliefs. And I feel like it's funny because progressives, being as empathic and insecure as they are most willing to compromise on their progressive ideals because they just want to be liked.
You know, I think it's... I went to say something, and then the kind of wrapped me up into many thoughts, and then I lost all the thoughts. Don't you love when that happens?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's very important for people... We're all freelance or private contractors, whichever, a title you want to identify with as a working musician or working artist. But those are kind of probably the two that we most of the time find ourselves in. And so... Kind of going back, actually, to all of these Yelp reviews and stuff like that, we really do, even when you're managed, you are still kind of managing yourself, in a way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's still some degree where you have to show up and show out, you know what I mean? And how you do that affects how much you get paid.
Right.
So you're, you're, like, you sell and you deliver. It's really hard because, it's not something that you want to talk about with everyone, and I don't think that it is something that you have to talk about with everyone, but I've really found it very, very helpful to just, like, have a network of people that I communicate with all of the time, and it's not about every single detail. Sometimes it's just about bits and parts, but just to have, like, just, like, a group of, like, 3 to 5 people that I always kind of, like, check with and discuss my job offers with and discuss, like, maybe what my next step should be. Here are my ideas. Because we really do have to think like a CEO, but most of the time we're just not making CEO money.
Right.
And I think that's the thing that's really hard that we have to, pull. That's the rock that we have to pull up to look underneath. But yeah, I just feel like that's probably, like, the biggest thing is that people feel like they can't talk to anybody about it, because sometimes we really do just make such small amounts that it's like, well, I don't want to let anyone know that, like, that's what I make.
Right.
Well, and also there is a freelancing culture that you, by nature of the fact you are a freelancer, you don't have any protection.
Exactly.
You don't have a safety net, if you're cheated, if you're, like you said, we can count the number
Yeah, easily. We don't even have enough fingers to count them all on.
Like, how many times, like, a transaction has been canceled, for instance. Yeah. And that actually brings up a really interesting thing that happened recently of New York City is either contemplating or did pass a...
I think they passed it.
They did? Thank God.
I think.
It is called the... The Freelance Isn't Free Act, FIFA, which is fun for soccer fans. I want to read a little bit about this new law in New York City specifically. This is from entrepreneur.com, you know.
Nice. That old chestnut.
Yeah. So here's a little bit about the freelancer law. If a business hires a freelancer for $800 or more worth of work over 6 months for either one project or a cumulative series of projects, a written agreement must be put in place. The term freelancer covers an independent contractor or any other worker not in a traditional employee-employer relationship. Key items that must be included in the contract include... the name and address of both the employer and freelancer / independent contractor, an itemized list of all the services to be performed by the freelancer / contractor with a value attributed to those services, the freelancer / contractor's rate and method of compensation, and the specific date when the freelancer must be paid or a mechanism to determine such date. If a date isn't provided, the freelancer must be paid no later than 30 days from the completion of the work. The new law establishes a formal mechanism for the director of the Department of Consumer Affairs to enforce the labor rights of freelancers who are cheated by an employer. It also provides for double damages and attorney's fees for any freelancer who successfully sues for a breach of the law. The law also provides for various penalties and remedies for non-compliance, as well as anti-retaliation provisions. So, I kind of want to, with all of us having, who are, you know, currently freelancers or have some semblance of experience as a freelancer, like, how would this law, I guess, improve your life?
For me, it's interesting because most of my freelance work, I do a lot of freelance work for other low-income people. So most of the time, my gigs don't pay more than $100. But I have worked a couple where they have paid that much. And usually there is a contract in place or you make a point to make one.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that was already being done. But, you know, when you're a freelancer, and you're working for a company, I mean, sure, a company is 9 times out of 10 gonna uphold their contracts they keep. But there's also no reason for them to. I mean, there is, but there isn't, like, a framework in the law for that.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what more the law is saying, that as long as you take the time and the care to cover your bases as a freelancer, there is now... a network of support for if someone just decides to tear up that contract.
Right.
You know? Like, I think
it's really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
I honestly don't feel like it's enough.
No.
$800, I mean, that's $200 more than you have to, like, if you report all of your miscellaneous income, you have to report $600 and more.
Sorry, there's a motorcycle.
That's okay.
No, you deserve to be heard.
I do deserve to be heard, god damn it.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, like, for the, you know, the fact that you have to report, less than that.
Yeah.
And that they'll only cover you past, like, $200 past that, that kind of frustrates me. The other thing is that, it's at least 6 months of work. Now, when we're... freelancing, I mean, when was the last time that you had a 6-month long contract?
Yeah, No.
Let me double check.
Most freelancers don't, really. They just do the day-to-day things.
Yeah, did I mishear that? It's at least 6 months.
If a business hires a freelancer for $800 or more worth of work over 6 months.
Yeah, so that's like, you have to meet two requirements.
Over 6 months.
Oh, for either one project or, for fuck's sake, yeah.
No, over 6 months. So it doesn't, over a 6 month period. And at least that's my understanding of
so
of the
basically
verbiage.
Like if you get hired
for 400 and then 7 months later you get hired for another 400, you don't need a contract for that.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Oh no, I thought you meant that
is that what that's saying?
Yeah, I think it's saying it's saying that the protections are in place. If let's say, you know, for instance, I used to be a teaching artist for this organization called Piano Arts.
Yeah.
And over the course of, you know, from January until May, I would go into schools. And I think, like, let's say I only got paid $700 over those 6 months, or over those 5 months of, like, going in, because I think I got $80 a pop, $80 every time I walked into a school.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's say I only did 4 schools. You know, so that would only be $320. And if they just decided not to write me, if they were just like, ha, I know there's a contract, but
right.
I don't really feel like helping you out.
Right.
Under this law, I still wouldn't have access to attorney support.
That's what I'm saying.
Support.
Gotcha.
That's what I'm saying. And
I thought it was the other way, where you had to have been working for a company for 6 months in order to get a contract.
Yeah.
No, I think it's...
honestly, I don't think that the contract is the point. I think that the protections are the point.
Yeah,
I think the law is assuming that as a responsible freelancer that you have a contract in place. But it's just saying, in order for you to be eligible for these protections, like, these are what any sensible freelancer would have included in the contract.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it says that there should be a contract. That was the thing that there needs to be a contract.
Well, yeah. I mean, that makes
sense. Yeah,
still
not enough.
And there needs to be a written agreement.
Yeah.
I'm still making plenty of agreements that are under six months or under $800.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And so you have to meet both clauses, you know,
right.
for that to be protected. So, I mean, it's still a good step in the right direction, but it's like... and these are the conversations that we need to be having, right? Because, like, that's okay, like... Baby steps, I guess. You know, baby steps. We, like, have this step. So now what can we do to, like, further our protection? You know, what kind of conversations can we have? Or, like, how can we elevate or refine our contracts or our communication with our consumers? And I'm consumers, whether that be audience members, students, churches, whatever it might be, how can we elevate our conversation so that it's understood that we need to be paid, you know, appropriately
mm-hmm.
for this, not only just for the times that we show up, but also for the skills that we show up having.
Yeah.
So there's, this is pretty interesting. There's this organization called the Freelancers Union. And I know that I've just been reading off of my phone a lot, but I think that this is important, and I think it speaks to what you're talking about a little
mm-hmm.
bit. Which is, so the Freelancers Union promotes the interests of independent workers through advocacy, education, and services. Nearly 1 in 3 working Americans is an independent worker. That's almost 54 million people and growing. At Freelancers Union, we strive to make freelancing better now and in the future through joint benefits, live member events, expert guides, blah, blah, blah. So, Freelancers Union gives independent workers a powerful voice through political action, research, and thought leadership. We aim to ensure that independent contractors receive adequate rights, protections, and professional benefits. So basically, this is an organization that will, like, help you find health insurance as a freelancer. They will help you, you know, they will connect you with lawyers in the event that you're stiffed
mm-hmm.
on a contract.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it's these, we always come back to this in these discussions, that it's the grassroots organizations that are at the end of the day going to help you.
Yeah.
Like the people who are in a similar place, who are at the end of the day going to point you in the right direction and lift you up. Because this is, I think, a Chicago organization.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
just like, you know, a woman named Sarah Horowitz, who was like, freelancers need rights. Let's figure some shit out. Let's pull some strings. Mm-hmm. Let's organize. And I think that that is an answer to the step in the right direction that you're saying, that like there needs to be more. It's like, absolutely, fuck yes, there needs to be more.
Yeah.
Let's organize and let's make it happen.
Cool.
I'm going to tell a quick anecdote that's tangentially related, because I'm a temp, right? And it's interesting because you get more security as a temp, of course, because there's like contracts with the agencies, but you also get no job security really. Yes. So anyway, so I was on this assignment that was supposed to be 2 weeks, and then it just kept going. And they'd be like, and I'd be like, okay, which was fine. Of course I wanted the work. And they'd be like, hey, just kidding. I would be like, hey, how much longer is this going? And they'd be like, oh, you know, I don't know. We'll check with the employer again. Oh, maybe through the end of this week and possibly next week. And then like 2 weeks would go by and I'd be like, okay. And I'd be getting offers from other agencies and stuff. And I'd be like, okay, but how long is this going? And anyway, it seemed like it was coming to an end, and I got an offer for a long-term temp job that paid better. So I said, hey, Monday I'm gonna start this new job, and I think we're wrapping up here. And they were like, okay, we understand. And now this week they were like, hey, could you just like mail us a letter of resignation from that position? I was like, no. Any night you could have been like, oh, you're not going back in tomorrow, and that's what temping is, and that would have been fine. You weren't gonna like give me unemployment or some shit, but then I have to send you a formal letter of resignation from a temp job? How? Mm-hmm. What nonsense is that? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Ugh.
I just wanted to share that because it was like one of the most ridiculous experiences I've ever had.
That kind of thing happens all the time, you know, unfortunately, especially for positions like temp jobs, where they just kind of like have you floating and you're like, okay, just let me know when the rope is going to end. Oh, okay, the rope has ended.
And that's happened to all of us. It's just like,
yeah.
Oh, suddenly, oh, I'm just not going in tomorrow. Okay.
Right. No problem.
And you have nothing, you're not, you know.
Right, they have no obligation to you.
None at all.
They have no obligation to you, but they were asking you for a letter of resignation.
Yeah, what nonsense.
That's pretty silly.
I know.
Yeah, it is.
The blessing I get
to you. Oh, shit, we're at like 47 minutes. Well, I mean, you guys want to do final thoughts? You all want to do final thoughts?
Oh, what kind of final thoughts?
I don't know.
Wrap it
up. What do you want to leave everyone with?
I think just, you know, I think it's very important. I'm not, you know, I don't consider myself like an advice guru, but I really have found that it's so helpful to just find like just your, you know, your little pod of people that you can talk to all the time about, you know, any of these issues. It doesn't have to be everybody, but just a couple people that you really trust. You know, that kind of vary on different levels. Like, someone who, like, is in the same boat as you, someone who's been in the same boat as you.
Yeah.
And then someone who's, like, completely from a different field that can tell you, like, oh, that would never happen in my field.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I think what we need more of is communal strength and smaller communities, because that is where you find comfort in communication, right? But also listening to other perspectives. I mean, and for so many reasons. One of which being exactly what you said, which is it like to understand what's expected of other people.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, none of us are like, well, at least I can only speak for myself. I'm not running for president, okay? Yeah. So I don't need to release my taxes to anyone, no. Right? Mm-hmm. Apparently that's not even a thing that you have to do anymore.
Yeah, apparently.
But so, like, what I was not saying when I, you know, mentioned that article was not that you need to talk about it with everyone all the time. But just, just find those people that, just to protect you, honestly, because you know, a lot of people are in music. Some people, you know, they got their music degree and they just felt good and fulfilled doing that, and they do free shows or, you know, they work part-time as a singer or whatever, and that's 100% fine. If that is your song, you go sing that shit, you know? But at the end of the day, like, the people who are doing this for work are doing it for salary. Like, we need to be able to take care of ourselves, provide for our essential needs, and this is all about, like, to me, like, just kind of finding those people to talk to is just all about protecting that.
Well, and in the same vein, it's, you know, having the environment where you do feel comfortable discussing payment, not necessarily at every turn, but like in, you should feel as though if you have a weird, fishy suspicion that you're not getting paid enough or someone else is not getting paid enough, what we all need to strive for is to foster environments where we feel comfortable being like, hey, sorry if this is a weird question. I just have a weird feeling. How much are you getting paid?
Right.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting paid this, and I feel like that's weird.
And I don't. I think we need to really like accept that idea. And I think that if you're a person who would receive that and be like, well, just on principle, I would never tell a person that. It's like I think you're wrong. And that's, maybe that's my opinion. I think that's the wrong way to be, because I don't want to do that because it'd be awkward. It's like, well,
that's one of those weird things that people are raised thinking
without
really realizing why, I think.
Right.
And you're just told it's rude. Don't ask someone their age. Like, you know, it's one of those things. It's like rude, and it's not polite. Polite people don't do it.
Right. And it comes from the gag rule tradition, because gag rule is something that's been, like, that's a thing that companies have done through capitalism for a really long time.
Yeah.
And so in that way, it's now become part of the culture, and less companies need to institute it because it's, like, unspoken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
Well, Nicole has to turn into a pumpkin.
I do.
Yeah.
I have to turn into a dancing pumkkin, as a matter of fact.
A dancing pumpkin. Yeah. And so we've got to wrap it up.
The last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1-minute plug for anything they have upcoming.
Oh my gosh!
I know, sorry to, like,
this
then
is
be
so much stress. Okay, okay,
on
okay.
The spot again. But okay. Worst case scenario, if it's, it can just be like people you think that are doing dope work or like cool self-care things.
Cool, awesome. Well, I am still working on my private voice studio and expanding that. So I still have specials for friends of friends and things like that if anyone wants to come through for some lessons. I also am singing and doing outreach either operatically or in some other musical vein at some of the bars around town, like the Drifter or the Green Door Tavern. This Saturday, I'm competing in the Fame competition run by Lily's Talent Agency. And then in June, I'll be out in Iowa singing in Speed Dating Tonight.
Oh, I know that opera.
Yeah.
My undergrad did it the year after I left.
Yeah. So, it should be very interesting. Katie Beaver was in it, too, so...
There are a lot of
I have
of
to talk to Katie
there.
About that. Hi, Katie, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Oh, and Classical Singer Convention is this... This month, so I'll be there kind of watching and...
Yeah.
Watching the conferences and stuff.
Cool.
So
do you,
it should be a lot of fun.
Do you have public social media?
I do. I have Instagram is The Cabin Baby Sings, and I mostly post about just kind of the gigs that I have and kind of just like the things that I am working through as a cabin baby in Chicago. So The Cabin Baby is like it was a nickname that I had when I was growing up because we grew up in this like shack in Alaska.
Cool.
So yeah, it's just kind of through that my lens of kind of seeing all of these great city life things like running water, I get to brush my teeth every day. It's just like really cool. So
cool.
That's kind of that. And then website, Nicole Bessa, Twitter, Facebook. Those are pretty much all of them. Snapchat
cool.
A little bit. I'm kind of trying to get a hold of that.
Yeah.
Anyway. I feel like we all are.
Yeah.
It's a monster.
I had Snapchat and I deleted it because I was overwhelmed.
I don't think I know.
Sending me weird dog face things and I was like, bah.
Yeah.
Why do you want to be a dog? Just be a human. Be yourself.
Go to work.
Yeah.
Go to work.
Okay, Miss Capitalist Nancy over here. Why don't you go to work? Why don't you stop? Why don't you give up all your avocados and buy a mansion?
I was channeling my
just here to pet the cat.
I was channeling my inner curmudgeon there. I think I think
we can have a whole discussion about that stupid Australian millionaire and the avocado toast. Did you guys read about that?
I did see that.
We don't have enough time to get into it right now, but we should. Yeah. Everyone just Google it. You'll find it if you don't know what I'm talking about. Because how much could a house cost? 10 avocados?
I generally go by the rule of if your thought starts with millennials are shitty for this reason, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Because millennials are like some of the most under... privileged, it's not the right word, but like we're just set up so poorly by generations before us, by like through so many different ways.
Yeah.
And I think the idea of being like, well, we really need to mechanize how millennials should be living their lives is kind of fucked.
There's a website that shows, okay, I don't know the URL, but how many avocado, if you gave up like an avocado a week, how long it would take you to afford a house. I mean, it's like 300 years
that
or something.
Sounds like a great book. Depending, if you give a mouse a cookie, the sequel, if you give a millennial an avocado,
or if you take an avocado away
toast
from the millennial.
If you give a millennial avocado toast.
Pluggy plugs, Jeff.
Good lord,
wow,
I don't even know a Jeff.
No,
I'm an Uncle Jeff.
You do?
No, that's a lie. There's no one named Jeff.
He drinks too much.
Oh.
I don't know why it went there. Anyway, go.
Oh my gosh.
Definite
life
plug
story
for cats being on your lap. I'd like
hell
to
yeah
plug that. I have a cat on my lap right now. It's hot out and Moody's a little warm on my leg right now, quite frankly, but I'm still like, it's relaxing and nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you all should go force a cat to sit on your lap. Also, I'm sure I should have a plug. You know, I'm just gonna say our New Brew concert went super well.
Yeah.
So if you all couldn't make it, you should look like our Facebook page, because we're gonna have another one in July. We're finalizing the details on that. And check out, look around for Chicago Folks Operetta's Johnny Johnson. I'm going to be in that. It goes up at the end of June. I have my first rehearsal this coming Tuesday. So it's a weird plugging things before you even start rehearsals, but
right.
I'm just going to mention it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep it in your plans. And, you know, and I think Alison Krauss is a really great interpreter of song. Just circle back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you should go listen to her too.
Cool.
Well,
all right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
I am Sasha Fierce.
All right. So if you want to keep up with us, there are tons of ways to do that. You can head over to scopymag.com. That's our site. That is our magazine. You can see articles there that we've published. Otherwise, as far as events coming up, we are working on our Scuppy Sessions performances. That's what we're calling them. We've already mentioned that on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Some of their highlights, like we mentioned.
We really got to wrap it up.
Country singer duo, Latin composers, Black composers concert, July 4th.
We will talk about
yes
it later.
social media, Facebook, Scuppy Magazine, Instagram and Twitter at Scuppy
Mag. Please donate to our show. It is hugely important. It means the world to us. We love you so much. Please do it. Give a little, give a lot. And if you can't give, listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make
and
something.
And then the Care Bear show. Oh, we don't have time.
No,
I'm sorry.
Go out and make something.